we're examining immigration policy under the Biden administration here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Biden added his signature to three executive orders on Tuesday that will reportedly reverse some of former President Trump's zero-tolerance approach. Biden at the White House.
With the first action today, we're going to work to undo the moral and national shame of the previous administration that literally, not figuratively, ripped children from the arms of their families, the mothers and fathers at the border, and with no plan.
How do you feel about Biden's immigration agenda? Do you live in a mixed status family or know someone facing deportation? What is their life like? 800-642-1234. Aaron Barbado directs the UW Law School's Immigrant Justice Clinic. Aaron, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, on President Biden's first day in office, he sent Congress legislation that would create a pathway to citizenship for the nearly 11 million undocumented immigrants living in our country. He has said he wants immigration reform. What do you see out of the Biden agenda?
So what we're seeing thus far from President Biden is that he's keeping in line with all of the promises that he made when he was campaigning to be president. And what I think we've seen thus far, again, is a reaction to the last 4 years under the Trump administration, which really worked to tear apart our immigration system and deter people from coming to the United States. President Biden is now working to eradicate some of the most horrific immigration policies that we've seen in our country's history to create a more moral and safe immigration process for people in this country, as well as people, families attempting to reunite in the United States.
We've seen these executive actions coming out of President Biden. How did former President Trump reshape U.S. immigration policy over the past 4 years?
You know, it's pretty astounding if you look at everything that happened in the past 4 years in affecting immigration. The executive, the president of our country, has a lot of power over immigration policies. So the past 4 years, we didn't see changes in laws because the president doesn't have the power to do that on his own. But we saw President Trump, through executive orders, take, you know, over 400 actions to really make it more difficult in every aspect of immigration, whether it's employment-based, humanitarian-based, or family-based, for people to immigrate to the United States. You know, we pretty much saw the end to the asylum process through his executive orders. In addition, we saw an aggressive attempt to cancel the deferred action for childhood arrivals for young people who came to the United States. And I've lived here for quite a long time. So it was really an attack on our immigrant communities. We saw that in Wisconsin when ICE had many raids that really created fear and separated families from our own home state. So it's been really traumatic for people in our immigrant communities and for families that have people who are immigrants in the United States.
When you look at President Trump's zero tolerance policy, can you explain what the policy did and what those outcomes were?
So the policy was created, as we said, as we heard from Jeff Sessions, was to deter people from seeking asylum in the United States. You know, take every child away, regardless of their age. So what we saw was people arriving on the southern border or crossing the southern border attempting to seek asylum. This is permissible under our laws. This is what we've had in our law since 1980 that allows people to enter the United States and then go through the process of seeking asylum. But what we saw with the zero tolerance policy is anybody who arrived at our border who had a child, it was to take that child away or give them the option of returning to their home country with their child. And what we need to recognize is these people were fleeing persecution in most cases. And so giving them the option of either remaining in the United States without a child and not knowing where their child would be detained versus returning to their country with their child, where they may be victims of persecution or torture, really left parents without an option. And so we separated over 5,000 families without a way of reconnecting those families, because we treated children as unaccompanied minors and the parents as single arrivals. And so there was no way of connecting the child with the parent. This is what our government did. Most would say that this is a form of, you know, kidnapping. We had no way of reuniting a parent with a child. And so now, today we remain with possibly over 1,000 families that are still remain separated. And we've seen this even with the people that we represent in Wisconsin, far from our southern border.
And we're going to talk more about the clinic and their representation and family separation. I want to reintroduce you. We're talking with Aaron Barbado, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School, as we look at immigration policy going forward in the Biden administration, and taking your thoughts. How do you feel about Biden's immigration proposal? What kinds of federal immigration policy would you like to prioritize? 800-642-1234. Steve is with us from La Crosse. Hi, Steve.
Yes, thanks for the topic and thanks for having me on. My main question is there any provision in the Biden plan for the asylum seekers who've been subjected to the wait in Mexico policy? People have been there in a long time in horrendous and catastrophic conditions.
Steve, thank you. Aaron, go ahead.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for that question. I think it's really quite an important question and something that sits heavily on my conscience today. So one of the executive orders that President Biden signed on Wednesday is to address the issues on the southern border and the asylum system, including a review of what's called the Migrant Protection Protocols, or the Remain in Mexico policy, which has left thousands of people in border towns in Mexico that waiting to process for asylum. And in many cases, it's very unsafe conditions. We've had clients that we serve who have been kidnapped in those cities while waiting just to process for asylum. So under these policies that President Biden has constructed is a review of this and to try to provide a way for these families who and individuals who have been stuck in the migrant protection protocols, a safe way to now process in the United States. It's, you know, obviously a little bit more difficult or a lot more difficult because of the pandemic. And how do we do this in a safe way that serves the people that are seeking refuge as well as creates a safe way for them to enter the United States? But my understanding that there is a task force and it's being processed. But as you alluded to, Steve, time is of the essence. This is a really dangerous situation for the people that have been living in Mexico without any protection from the U.S. government or from the Mexican government. And so hopefully this will be addressed as soon as humanly possible.
Aaron, do you know what conditions are like in these camps waiting at the border amid COVID and the pandemic?
Right. You know, and we say camps, these aren't, you know, official camps. There's mm-hmm. people that have been forced to live in, you know, tents, tent cities. And, you know, you look at some of the cities such as Matamoros, which is one of the most dangerous cities in the world. And the Department of State has, you know, we have evidence of that. But we force people to remain there while they're seeking asylum. And this is not a way to be a leader in humanitarian relief. And it's also contrary to what our laws say. There are, in certain cities like Tijuana, where I've been, they have shelters, but those shelters are they're at capacity. And it's even more difficult, obviously, with the global pandemic. So there is urgency. There is a need to protect these people who our laws allow us to protect. And we are leaving in very vulnerable situations. And it's not to say anything negative about the country of Mexico, but we've created these cities where people are incredibly vulnerable to cartels and to gangs, because it's very easy to tell who is seeking to migrate to the United States, and they are incredibly vulnerable. incredibly vulnerable situations to the people that kidnap them for a ransom and take advantage of their situation while they're waiting just to seek asylum in the United States.
We have Aaron Barbado, who's director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School, explaining the situation. What policies do you think should be implemented on seeking asylum in our country? How do you feel about the work of ICE agents? What should ICE focus on? What policies do you want Biden to pursue that target asylum seekers? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Aaron Barbado here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing immigration policy under the Biden administration here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The president unveiled the next step in his immigration agenda Tuesday, creating a task force to reunify families separated at the U.S.-Mexico border, among several executive actions. Back in October, it was reported that attorneys and advocates for immigrants had been unable to locate the parents of hundreds of migrant children who were separated from their families under President Trump's zero tolerance policy from 2017 to 2018. Have you been reunited with a family member from another country? What was it like to come together? 800-642-1234. Aaron Barbado directs the UW Immigrant Justice Clinic, and she's with us for the hour. Let's take another call now. Mary Kay is joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay. What would you like to add?
I would like to add that people, when they come in over the border, should come in like everybody else to be fair. You have to have a certain system in, like Ellis Island we did a long time ago, so it's fair to everybody. The second thing is people that are arrested by ICE, ICE is hired to serve warrants for unauthorized people being in the United States and working in the United States. And if they're not allowed to do their job, how are we supposed to move on?
Mary Kay, thanks. Aaron, you know, Mary Kay, backing what ICE agents do, how would you respond to their work?
You know, I think those are both great questions. And I think they also highlight some misunderstandings within a lot of people have over the immigration system, especially, you know, when you say people coming over the border, how they should do it in a fair way. Or you often hear people say, why don't people just wait in line and go through the process? Well, when we address the asylum process at the southern border, our laws allow, this is what our laws provide for. It's permissible for people to seek asylum. And there's a reason we have these in our laws. Our asylum laws are a direct response to humanitarian crises from around the world, including the world's reaction to World War II and how we turned away people from the United States who were then sent back to Nazi Germany and lost their lives because we did not offer people protection. So it's just really important that people understand what our laws are there for and why we have them. We can't forget that. In addition, in terms of what ICE is doing, Biden, when he became president, he asked for a 100-day moratorium on deportations. And the reason that he wanted to do that is to allow for a review of our policies and enforcement. Things have gone very much unchecked over the past 4 years in terms of the discretion and the aggressiveness of ICE agents. We have to remember that the people who are in a country, even if they may be undocumented, that doesn't mean that they're not people or that they're not good humans. There are different circumstances that bring people to the United States. And what we need to ensure in our process is due process as well as access to justice. If we don't have that, people can take advantage of people without documentation. And that's really terrifying. We need people to have resources and to be safe, as well as keep families together. What we want to remember is when someone is being deported from the United States, that doesn't mean that they're a bad person. It may mean that our laws don't allow them to remain here in the United States. Furthermore, it may mean that it may be a father of 5 U.S. citizen children. That is another form of family separation. So if we go through this and ICE continues to arrest and deport people without oversight, families are in danger. Families in Wisconsin are in danger of being separated permanently. So ICE has authority, and they continue to have authority. And Biden has indicated that he wants to ensure that there is security within our borders, relief from any sort of terrorist activity from outside. That's what ICE would be doing, as well as ensure that people are safe. And I think that that is the way to continue. We need to review what has happened in the past 4 years, because it has been pretty incredible, the amount of human rights violations that have occurred. And by just taking a pause and reviewing it, we can ensure that we have a safe and fair procedure.
We're with Aaron Barbato this hour, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. We're looking at how immigration policy will be shaped under the Biden administration. With your insights and questions, 800-642-1234. Lisa is joining us from Appleton. Hi, Lisa. What would you like to share?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Well, I just want to comment about how did I feel right now under Biden administration. I've been living here for 21 years, and I feel undocumented. People, it's so easy to ask me why you don't go online and go for the process. And like the lady was talking about it, it's so hard sometimes to even go online because there is no way to do that. I have been here 21 years. I've been paying taxes. I also graduated from high school here, and I couldn't apply for DACA because I was already over 30 years old. So my only hope is Biden can do something for people like me and maybe a better future for us. And I feel really sad when people say, well, you should go online. They don't know how hard it's been trying my whole life here.
Lisa, thank you for calling. Aaron, what could the Biden administration do for people like Lisa?
Hopefully a lot. You know, Lisa, thank you for sharing your story and for your bravery. And I think what I mentioned before is, you know, you often hear people should just get in line. And what I also learn is oftentimes when people take my immigration law class, their eyes are open to really what the true process is. The process is difficult regardless of whether you're trying to immigrate through the humanitarian process, asylum, or through employment-based or family-based. When you look at the family-based process, for example, let's say some of the waiting lines are over 20 years. That's not a way to reunite a family or for a way to allow people to process in the United States in a way that is feasible. And so when we look at why would Biden create a process to allow 11 million people to obtain their green cards and have a pathway to citizenship, it's because there's no other way. And so 11 million people is a lot of people. And as Lisa addressed, intricate parts of our community, especially, you know, in Wisconsin and around the nation, truly. But Biden, you know, oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to bring in Tyler here in Eau Claire with a question for you. Hi, Tyler. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering, according to New York Times, 1,500 immigrant children have been reported missing from detainment camps down south. What does that mean that they're missing? And how do you misplace 1,500 children? And what is the administration doing to find these children?
Aaron, go ahead.
Yes, Tyler, that's a really good question. I spoke about this a little bit before, but when the zero tolerance policy happened, where we were separating families at a border, our government had no way of tracking connecting a parent with a child once they were separated, because they were processed in a way that we couldn't keep track, which is unconscionable for our country to do that. It was such a rushed process. And when the point of the situation was to deter people from coming from the United States, our government clearly didn't take into account how horrific this would be. Those parents remain, a lot of families remain separated because many of the parents were deported. And what the sad reality of it, what the horrific reality of it is, that some of those parents may not be alive anymore. They were fleeing persecution and torture in their home countries, and then were given the choice of remaining in the United States separated from their child, or being deported and allowing their child to maybe remain and be safe in the United States. It's an incredibly difficult decision, if not impossible decision, for a parent to make. And so at this point, the task force that Biden announced is supposed to reunite those families. And it's going to be difficult for a number of reasons. It's been a long time.
And we need to pause there with Aaron Barbado, who heads up the UW Law School's Immigrant Justice Clinic. Are you a DACA recipient or refugee? How long have you been in the U.S.? What are the most challenging parts of citizenship process? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Aaron Barbado after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we discuss U.S. immigration policy. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Amid the pandemic in April, former President Trump signed a proclamation suspending most legal immigration. The New York Times is reporting a backlog of more than 380,000 immigrant visa applicants who are awaiting visa interviews at consulates. Are you or a family member in limbo waiting for a visa to be processed? What have you learned? What can you share about how immigration policies are affecting your family? 800-642-1234. Aaron Barbado is director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School, and she's our guide. Let's bring in another call now. Pat is joining us from Wausau with a question. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, hi. I guess I had a couple of questions, and there was a comment made by the person, the presenter, that, you know, there's 11 million people in the country, and there's really no way of having them, you know, sent back, and I understand that. The issue there, I think, in some respects, is it's a circular reference. You know, people are here, there's a lot of people here, we can't send them back, and then the next wave comes in, and we've got more people here, we can't send them back. We've got to have, a process that works, you know, from a standpoint of not having anyone that just chooses to come in. It's really not fair if you say, you know, look at people from Africa. They can't get here because there's no border to get through to. It's very, very difficult. And so they're not able to come, but everyone from South America, Mexico, and so on can come and go through our border because they're able, because obviously we get a lot of people that are undocumented. You know, how does that make sense? And how, you know, and the other thing is, I support people being able to come to our country. That's how it's built, just done in a way that works and is legal. But you know, and I liken it to something like, if you're living in your house and you leave for the weekend and someone comes in your house and they're great people and they just happen to hang out in your house for the weekend and you come back and you go, hey, I'd really like you to leave. You know, it's kind of like I know it's a kind of a strange analogy, but, you know, that's in some way, shape, or form, effectively what's happening is people are coming on their own volition, you know, doing it on their own, but not having, you know, not being invited in, not being given, you know, and granted, we're probably not giving them a good enough legal path.
And Pat, thank you. I want Aaron to respond there to your analogy. What do you think?
You know, I think you alluded to this kind of a strange analogy, and I think I understand the point that you are making. But I think what we need to do and what this administration is doing and through one of the executive orders is taking a look at the root causes of irregular migration. This has been many of 11 million people have been here for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, a long time. This isn't necessarily a today issue of people crossing the border and just coming in easily. It's not easy. Our border is fortified in so many ways that it's not easy for people to come into the United States and just remain without documentation. And then if they do remain in the United States without documentation, life can be incredibly difficult and very scary, especially in the past 4 years. If we look at immigration policy for many years, we can look, even President Reagan had a process that helped people who were here undocumented for a long time to receive their a pathway to citizenship. So this isn't really a new idea. This is more of a way to make things better, to correct the system, and to ensure that people in the United States and the United States citizens are safer and have a better future.
Erin, let's talk about the work of your clinic, the Immigrant Justice Clinic. What are you doing for people who face deportation?
So, you know, it's been incredibly difficult to figure out how to serve people during the pandemic. Most of the work that we do, we represent people who are in deportation proceedings. Some of the people are seeking, most of the people are seeking humanitarian relief, filing for asylum or for withholding of removal or something called Convention Against Torture. But we also serve people who are detained at the Dodge County Correctional Facility in Wisconsin, which currently is the only detention facility in Wisconsin where people in ICE detention are detained. There are about 200 beds there, and everybody who's in that facility is in removal proceedings, so in deportation proceedings. So we attempt to provide information and representation to people in that, in the process, who are being deported, because our government doesn't provide representation for people who are in deportation proceedings. So the majority of people in deportation proceedings are in front of an immigration judge without representation, while a government attorney is representing the United States. So our goal is to ensure due process and access to justice to as many people as possible. We can't serve everyone, but along with community partners, we're working towards ensuring something called universal representation, so that nobody has to face an immigration judge without representation.
How are you meeting with them amid the pandemic, and what about language barriers?
So my students are often bilingual. So we have many that speak Spanish, other languages, French and Arabic. And so we can serve a lot of our clients with languages, but we can also rely on other language resources to ensure we can communicate with everyone. Right now, we are meeting with everyone virtually. Sadly, many of our clients are still detained. We've had five clients in ICE detention who have contracted COVID, even though they have had U.S. citizen relatives that were ready and willing to house them. But ICE, under their discretion, would not release our clients. I'm hoping that will change very soon. It's incredibly difficult to represent people who are detained and scared for their life, not only for being deported, but now because of being detained in facilities where being socially distanced is impossible. So seeing my students are incredible, and they work really hard to provide representation, but it's very difficult to do that in a virtual manner.
How long might these people be in the Dodge County Detention Facility, in this ICE facility? How long are they there, and then what happens?
You know, it really depends. Some people are there for only a week or two. Some people may be eligible for bond. Many of our clients, we apply for something called parole, which is under ICE's discretion. So ICE could let provide parole to almost everybody who is in detention. And I think during a pandemic, that's probably what should happen, even without a pandemic. This is civil detention. It's not criminal detention. And I think some people don't understand that. So the people that are in ICE detention are there during removal proceedings, which is not considered, it's a civil process. It's not criminal. That's why they also don't have representation provided by our government. But people can be in detention for months, up even years. And people choose to do that because sometimes it's better to be in detention than being deported to a country where they have a fear of return.
We're talking with Erin Barbado, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. We're looking at how immigration policy will be shaped under the Biden administration and her work as part of the Immigrant Justice Clinic leading it. You can join in with your questions about immigration, 800-642-1234. Aaron, we heard from Marge in Mequon, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Marge says U.S. foreign policy has supported Central American and South American governments suppressing people for decades. And Marge says Americans overlook this history too easily and how it is connected to the refugees we are seeing coming to the U.S. today. What do you make of that?
I think it's an incredible, it's an important point to address. Many of we look at the migration that's happening, the irregular migration that's happening from the Northern Triangle of Central America. Many people there are fleeing violence from gangs that formed after people were deported from the United States. And these are powerful, intricate gangs that the governments can't control. And we have had a hand in many of the governments in that area and have caused some of these problems. And so it appears that the Biden administration is attempting to address some of these core issues. And how do we provide relief in a way that is will make lives safer and better for humans that we can help, as well as in countries that we have had a part of the been part of the problem?
There are reports of a huge backlog of immigrant visa applicants who are waiting for their visa interviews at consulates all over the world. What are you seeing there with this backlog?
So many of the consulates and embassies have been closed around the world due to the pandemic. And so people have been waiting to emigrate to the United States because they've been eligible to do so, whether it's through employment-based or family-based manners. There has just been a huge pause on it, and we haven't addressed a way to do this safely. So families will remain separated and waiting to reunite with their loved ones for a long time until the Department of State is up and running again.
We're talking with Erin Barbado, directs the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School. She's our guide to immigration policy under the Biden administration, these new executive orders that take aim at former President Trump's immigration policies. What are your priorities for immigration in America? Should we reopen our borders to refugees, to foreign workers, to asylum applicants? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute, more conversation with Aaron Barbado here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Erin Barbado. She directs the Immigrant Justice Clinic at UW Law School, and we're looking at the framework for sweeping changes to immigration laws under the Biden administration. Erin, let's talk about DACA. President Biden promised to protect so-called Dreamers after taking office. What is the status of the Dream Act?
So President Biden, on his first day in office, preserved and fortified DACA. So he promised to continue it for at least the next 4 years, but he wants to take it to allow a road to citizenship, an expedited road to citizenship for people with DACA, people that came here when they were younger and have basically fulfilled a number of high bars in order to qualify for DACA. The American public, it has shown that 75% of people in the United States approve of a pathway to citizenship for people with DACA. So this isn't really something that should be controversial, but it is something that is addressed in Biden's U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021, which would allow people with DACA, many people with DACA have already been in this with DACA for almost 9 years now. So we think of people with DACA as young people, but oftentimes they're now adults. They own houses. They have families. They are nurses. They are frontline workers. They are educators. So the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021 would ensure that people with DACA will be able to become, have their green cards and possibly citizenship in the next 3 or 4 years, which it is a way to do it now to ensure that if things change in 4 years and we don't have the same executive, that people with DACA would be protected, whereas we looked at the past 4 years where people with DACA were unsure of where their future would be and whether they would be deported. And that just is not a way that this country seems to really care about people with DACA and their future.
Are the families of DACA recipients protected as well? What is the status of mixed status families?
You know, when you talk about mixed status families, people with DACA, if their, let's say their spouse is undocumented, that spouse isn't really going to be protected by DACA in any way. They may be protected by additional provisions in the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021 if that passes, which that's going to be a long road. We don't know what that's going to look like. People with DACA often have U.S. citizen children. They are born here. They are U.S. citizens, but that doesn't mean that they don't live without fear of losing their parent who may be deported if they aren't allowed to process for their green card and for lawful permanent resident status and citizenship. So these children often worry about whether they come home from school and their parents will be there. And I think the Citizenship Act of 2021 is trying to correct that.
Yeah, the Citizenship Act, the U.S. Citizenship Act that the president sent to Congress on his first day in office, it said it seeks to modernize our immigration system. What does modernize mean to you at this point?
You know, I think at this point, after the past 4 years, when we saw such abuse and fear in our immigration system and so much suffering, When I think about modernizing a system, it means that we will create a system that will benefit the country as well as people from around the world and not harm people. It won't be used as a tactic to harm people in order to give additional people benefit. And so I think this is looking at it in a modern way. How do we correct this? How do we make this better? How do we ensure that these abuses don't continue in the future? How does the United States become, again, a leader in humanitarian relief and continues to be a country where people want to immigrate?
Erin Barbado, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. Let's take another call now. John is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, John. What would you like to add?
Good morning. Well, my research tells me, and I don't claim to be an expert, that many of these children were abandoned by their parents, sent here illegally, sometimes with coyotes, and the parents have abandoned them. What attempts are the parents making to reconnect with the children?
In the family separations, Erin, what are you seeing there?
So when we say abandon, I think what is misconstrued in that situation is many of these parents were given the option of being deported with their child or being deported and allowing their child to seek asylum in the United States. In my opinion, that is not abandonment. That is what a parent would do to permit a child safety, especially if you're fearing persecution and that's why you fled. So many of these parents made incredible sacrifices to save their children while not protecting themselves. There are organizations prior to this task force that have worked to reunite families. It's challenging because many of these families, they may not have a phone. They may not have an email address. So how do you find a parent who lives in a very remote part of Guatemala? So we need government to help reunite these families and correct these atrocities that were done at the hands of our government.
Mark is joining us now from Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm wondering what's being done legislatively, what's being proposed to root out the sadism that ICE is just riddled with. In all prison situations, there needs to be more exposure of what's going on. We need Human Rights Observer mandated by law to be on site to prevent things like the standard procedure for asylum seekers, no matter before there are any cases heard, is to throw them in a refrigerator trailer overnight or longer. And, you know, in the Obama administration, you know, which is really, you know, it was grievous amount of deportations, they're NPR exposed the use of Dobermans, attack dogs, in ICE detention facilities to terrorize the prisoners.
Let's get Aaron to respond there on oversight and accountability for immigration and customs enforcement.
You know, I fully agree. There are things that I've seen and witnessed over the past 4 years that I wish I could unsee, but we can't. And so what we need to do now, and what the Biden administration needs to do now is to expose these abuses and to correct them, because that's the only thing we can do at this point. It's obvious that we have abused people who are seeking protection in the United States, and we need to be better. And I think that is a goal of the Biden administration.
What do you see the work ahead for reunification, for all of this task force work, and in order to oversee all of these executive orders?
So, I mean, there's much work to be done, but I think the future is to first reunite families that were separated. That is, that is a pretty obvious goal of this administration. But then it's also, correcting a lot of the human rights abuses that are going on. You know, whether we put people in these hileras, these cold cells, when they come to the United States or are seeking asylum, and having additional alternatives to detention. We don't need to detain people who are seeking asylum in the United States. There are programs that we can do that have worked and are safe for the people seeking asylum, as well as our communities, and are less money for taxpayers to pay. So there's a lot of things that this administration can do to ensure that we are following human rights, as well as complying with the laws of the United States.
As we wrap up here, less than a minute, what are the goals for your clinic and what you intend to do at the Immigrant Justice Clinic under this administration, under the Biden administration?
You know, the work is still starting. We were swimming upstream. We always will be as immigration lawyers and representing people in this process. That's just the way the system is. But it was, almost drowning in the past 4 years. Now I'm hoping the tide will slow a little bit and we'll be able to provide more representation and ensure that people have their rights and have a safe way to remain here in the United States. And one day, hopefully, have universal representation for everybody who's facing removal or deportation from the United States.
Aaron, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Aaron Barbado is director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This conversation comes to you on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.